Well, good morning, everybody. I think probably all of you know by now from the things I've shared in the different cafe churches that I had a breakdown about 10 years ago. And I'm sort of in the recovery phase. I'm not sure quite what the destination is. I think I'm towards the end of the process. This is the first time I've spoken like this for many years, and so if I'm a bit stressed, you can understand that a bit, isn't it? And I felt God said to me, before doing this, a few weeks ago, he said to me he wanted me to share something in this series, because as it went along and I looked at it in advance, I thought, goodness me, God, this is some of my journey, this. And I said to him, no, Lord, I don't want to do it. I'm not going to approach Peter. If you want me to say something, you'll have to get Peter to approach me. And then sure enough, my wife said, have you seen the email from Peter? So here I am. I feel as if I'm a bit of a practical example, really, for this first part of the series that we've had, because my journey follows it. I couldn't really cope. It starts really at the beginning. I start at the beginning, talk through the lead up to the breakdown, a bit about the breakdown, and then a bit about my recovery process. I couldn't really meet the expectations that I had placed on me from home. I couldn't meet them at school, and I couldn't meet them at work. And it sort of ended up for me feeling like it was constant failure in my life. And my response to that was to try harder. Some people would call it perfectionism. Some people would call it being driven. But I was that person who got there first, who did twice as much work as everybody else, who had loads of notes for everything. And I felt in my life that I sort of suffered from bipolar from quite a long way back in my life. I would have these rolling ups and downs. I'd have very high productive periods where I was firing on all cylinders and nobody seemed to be able to keep up, and where people were saying, slow down, Alistair, slow down. Then I'd have these great long lows where I couldn't cope with life and life was too much. I remember being at work many years ago in London, and I would leave my desk unable to function, and I'd walk down to the embankment of the River Thames, and I would be in tears. I wouldn't want to go back to my desk. I wouldn't know how to cope. I would worry about what my direct boss would think, that I was out for too long. And I often prayed in a perverse way, I didn't pray to God in this way, but I often repeated Job's words about wishing he'd never been born, wishing the day that he'd been conceived hadn't occurred, wishing that the day would be darkened and not exist. But God hid me through that time, and we're going to sing the hiding, we're on my hiding place a little bit later, and it's a very special song to me, because God did hide me in all that time. Although he never took the storm away, to be honest, he just hid me in the cleft of the rock. He split the rock and put me in it sometimes and let the storm roar around me. Leading up to my breakdown was quite hard. It was sort of the crystallization of it was at work. I hit this immovable object at work, and I did my usual strategy of trying, pushing. He'd warned me in advance that my job was coming to an end. I knew that many years in advance. And the day it happened, I hadn't slept for quite a few days properly. I didn't sleep at all the night that it actually happened, and I woke up and I knew something was going to happen that day. I said to my wife, I'm not very good today. I think you ought to ring my boss and warn him that I'm coming in and I'm not very good. By the time I got to work, it had sort of happened and I was just broken. I felt like a car crash, really. In the same way as you'd think about a car crash physically, that somebody's body has been smashed up, I felt I was completely wrecked mentally and emotionally. I couldn't think anymore. My emotions were raw. I was crying all the time. I had no physical sensations anymore. I just felt numb. I couldn't respond to anything. My wife would say to me in the days that followed, what do you want for dinner? I'd say, don't ask me such difficult questions. I just can't cope with them. I stared at the wall all the time. I just couldn't function. I would watch television. She would come back into the room and say to me, was it good? I'd say, I can't remember what I was watching. The depression was dreadful. I would not be able to get out of bed. I couldn't function. I just was just, my life felt like it had come to an end. But God was there with me even in that dark time. He oversaw me leaving my job. He sorted my pension in a most miraculous way. He kept me sort of in suspension for a period of time. I was in this malaise. I couldn't work out what the answer was. My employer kept asking me, what do you want to do? Do you want this option? Do you want that option? I couldn't work it out. I just didn't know. And then one day in the morning, I just came to, and I thought, goodness me, as to why don't you know the answer to this? It's so obvious. And I went ahead and pursued that answer. God just brought me round. And in the end, he gave me both options, because that's the kind of God he is. He spoke to me at this time through Nebuchadnezzar. The Nebuchadnezzar had a journey that he was put out to grass for 7 years. And I felt him saying to me, Alistair, this is going to be a long period. I didn't know how long. I didn't feel he was saying it was 7 years, but it's going to be a long period. You need to buckle in. I did the same thing for a long period of time. I would try and try and try, and then I would crash off, and I would go around this loop, effectively the same bipolar loop over and over again, and with this great level of depression going on all the time. But God waited patiently for me with love and compassion all the way through that. And about at 7 years, I don't think that's related to the Nebuchadnezzar thing, but just at 7 years, it started to turn. He intervened again. I went to Emmaus, and I saw this book on the side, and I just thought, from the title, though, I need to buy that workbook. I bought it. I took it home. I didn't really do anything out of the workbook, to be honest. I flicked through it. I talked to my wife about it. I thought it was all useful stuff, but I didn't really engage with it. But what God spoke to me about was the author, Sherry Hooper. I looked her up, and I got one of her books on depression, and this was a real turning point. Finally, I found somebody that understood where I was, and all of a sudden I thought, oh, my goodness me, there's a way out of this. God is just laying the path. He's waited for me to be ready, and then he's just laying the path. And at this point, I started to realize that although I tried to forgive the people in my life that had been involved in some of the damage and some of the things that had gone wrong for me, it wasn't just about forgiveness. It was actually about me. I was part of the problem. The way I'd responded, my driven nature, the way that I dealt with the things that had gone in my life was the problem. And so at this time, the sort of two sides coalesced together, the sort of side from the mental health people and the relationship with God, they just kind of started to dovetail together. I was referred to the group treatment service in Sussex, despite my GP's refusal to do so, and God just intervened again miraculously. My wife had an appointment with somebody. They were fobbing her off with this appointment, but she had this appointment with somebody, and she talked about me, and the lady said, just book an appointment with me. I could refer you. And I got this referral. The doctor, I don't even know whether the doctor even knows now that it's gone. And it's just, and God has just seen me through the process. And I just want to take you through the process as quick as I can. And sort of try and help you understand. If we could put the slide up now, just so that you can see where I'm going. It started for me in mindfulness and stillness. That came from the Cherry Hooper book. Just being mindful and just listening to myself and just seeing what was going on inside me, seeing what was going on around me. And it connected me absolutely phenomenally with God. I started to see God everywhere I was going. I saw him in the sunrise. I do a paper round every morning, and I would see him in the moon left over from the night. I would see him in the stars in the darkness. I would see him in the sun rising. But every time I go out, I see him in a different way, something different, some other dimension of him. You know, one day I just looked at the trees and I thought, my goodness me, God, you make all these things, and every single one of them is different. None of them are the same, but they reproduce themselves again and again. And we as humans, we just like the widgets to be the same. The same car, the same car, the same car. He makes everything different. That's just one example of the things that I would see. He gave me a different perspective on life. And therefore, rather than thinking about, cursed is the day I was born, I had this thing come to me over and over again, from Job again. I know that my Redeemer lives, and in the end, he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh I will see God. I will see him with my own eyes and not another. How my heart yearns within me. And I thought that was just amazing. Job, so long before any of this happened, before Jesus came, before all of the things really in the Bible, and he had this vision of Jesus, and he just held on to that. And God just spoke to me so strongly. And I see mindfulness now as a vital part of my life, being still with God, checking in on myself, seeing where what I've carried over from the day before, where I am, what do I need, what should I plan for today, how should I react to it. And it led to an awareness, as I've explained before in Cafe Church, it led to an awareness about what was going on in me. It led to an awareness of God. I felt like my sight and my hearing had been restored in a way. I saw that God was blessing me constantly every day. I started to realize that actually the breakdown was a blessing. Incredibly, the breakdown was a blessing. God had planned it from the beginning. He loved me enough that he didn't just leave the hurts and the pains that had gone on through my life. He didn't leave the way I dealt with it, but he planned a process all the way through. And he knew, because he is outside of time. I think that's difficult for us to grasp. It's certainly difficult for me to grasp that he sees it all simultaneously. He was with me when the events were happening in my childhood and at work, etc. And he was with me when the breakdown occurred, and he's with me now. And to him, they're all the same. He has no problem making them all link up because he's outside of time. I started to realize that God speaks in the stillness and the quietness at this time. And that my hectic life, my pushing ahead, my busyness had stopped me hearing. And it wasn't that he wasn't speaking, it's just that I was just too busy. I'll do it, God, I'll do it. I know the answer. I'll write some notes. I'll be on it, don't you worry, kind of thing. I had to stop. That's just a technique I learned from mental health services, you know, to stop, to take a breath, to calm myself, to observe what's going on around me. This is a practical tool in the kind of the here and now, in the moment when the stuff's going down and we're sort of repeating our practices of the past. I often repeat them. I would just go to the driven arrangement, have the anger, the rage that's in me for the injustice that's been done to me in the past and all the things, and you start replicating it again and again and again as a person. And I had to learn to stop. I'm not good at doing it. The last extra P is about practicing it. I'm not good at those repeated things, learning them. But I try to do it. But I feel like a bit like I'm at AA sometimes. I don't drink and I've never have drunk, but I feel like I'm constantly falling off this one. And I just have to get myself back up and say, I got it wrong again, Lord, I got it wrong. Just help me get back up. The next thing that I had to learn was acceptance. I had to accept my past. I had to come face to face with those things. I sort of feel in some ways it's like coming face to face with your demons. I don't mean them as spiritual things necessarily, but I mean them as, it's like that. You come face to face with the things that have hurt you. And I had to come face to face them. I had to face them. I had to think about where they'd come from, why I was taking these strategies. I had to accept that my strategy had failed. And that when it was really wanted, it let me down. It didn't work. It was a strategy built perhaps on my childhood and my past, and it didn't work very well in my adult life. And I was just repeating it and repeating it and repeating it. And people around me would comment on it and would say, Alistair, you know, your strategy is really working. I mean, my lecturer at university, the second time round, because I dropped out the first time because I had a bit of a breakdown and I failed, he'd said to me, Alistair, you're so clever. And I'd say, I'm not clever, I just can't stop trying. I'm so linked to it that I can't stop trying. I can't stop working. Anybody could get these results if they work like I do. I just can't turn it off. And I felt guilty about it because I knew it wasn't godly in me and I knew it wasn't right, but I just couldn't stop. It was never enough. If I did the past papers for some of those exams once, I did them 10 times. I could recall the numbers. When I got into the exam, I thought, oh, that's that one, yeah. Yeah, that answer will be that. Because they would reuse the numbers. But it wasn't good, it wasn't godly, and it wasn't the way God wanted me to live. I see acceptance as, I want to say something about acceptance. I think acceptance is such a powerful thing in our lives, and it's been such a powerful thing for me. I spent so much time at the beginning in the 7 years going round and round the loop, wanting it not to be there. Wanting the depression to go away, wanting saying, I'll just do it again, I'll do it again, I'll fight against it, it'll be okay. I've used this tool all my life, it'll be okay, going round and round. But one of the keys was to say, I accept it. I am there. And all of a sudden, other options opened up. It is such a powerful thing to stop fighting the things and to say, oh, it's happening. Okay, Can I look past it? What are the options if I accept this is happening? It's such a powerful tool. I have to accept I did have a bit of a crisis at about this point in the process about my relationship with God and with what the Bible said, because I thought, goodness me, I'm learning all these tools about how my brain works, how my emotions work, etc. But why isn't it in the Bible? And I had to go back to the Bible and I had to really start to pore over it. And I came to the conclusion, as Peter said earlier, really, that some of the things I'd been taught as a child were not that helpful, and they weren't actually there when I went looking for them, in all honesty. This obsession with right and wrong, this obsession with failure that we sort of schooled into in an evangelical sense, that we've got to hit these targets. And I looked in and I thought, goodness me, Jesus doesn't do that. He's just compassionate. He's just kind and loving. And at this time, I started to realize that life was a process. It came back to the Sherry Huber book. I was just walking on my round, and God just spoke to me, as he quite often does. He often speaks to me from verses, brings them back into my mind and sort of applies them to me, and I go and read them and I see the context. I think, oh my goodness me, you're speaking to me, Father. Other times he speaks to me through lyrics of a song, something completely erroneous, something that I see, some practical little thing around the place that just I see. And even from my dog, he speaks to me through my dog, telling me to slow down, to get my rhythm back in line with his. And this day he spoke to me, and Sherry had said in her book something like, the things that we do, they have effects going forwards in our lives. And I finally fell in, I realized life is a journey, it's a process, and the things we do today affect tomorrow, and they affect the next day, and they affect the next week. And all of a sudden I got the motivation, and God said, goodness me, you've got to. I said, God, I've got to stop doing some of these things, because if I don't stop doing them here and now today, I'm going to have to do them next week, because they're going to have an effect to carry over. The feelings that I've stirred up today and I've allowed to pour out in my life today, the argument I had with the driver on Old Shoreham Road, where I was absolutely so mad that he'd cut me up, and I was standing in the middle of the road, I'd swung my car in front of his. This was about 5 years ago. I'd swung my car in front of his to stop it. I blocked the whole of the two lanes. I had cars stacking back about 20 deep. I had people shaking their fists out of the window. And I just said to him, no, this is wrong. You can't drive like this. I'd lost completely. Now I realized that event was going to cascade forward in my life. It was going to affect the next day, the next week, and other things were going to cascade from it. And I realized life is a process, and with God, it's a relationship. It's an ongoing relationship. And we need to sink into him, and we need to listen to him. He started to change the kind of center of my life from being this driven, delivery-focused person. He started to say, no, it's about love and compassion, Alistair. The psychological people said to me, it's about compassion. Compassion for yourself, compassion for others around you. It'll transform you, Alistair. And then when I thought about God, I thought, no, God, for you, God, it's love. It's about love, and it's about just your sacrificial love, and it is foolishness. It is completely foolishness, because the things that God asks us to do are just completely barking in a way. And that's my experience of God. They are completely barking. You know, stopping to talk to somebody in the road just because I just feel God wants me to stop and talk. The other day, I was finishing my round on Old Shoreham Road and felt God say very strongly, I want you to take the £25 that you've got in your wallet, and I want you to give it to the man on the other side of the road. I said, well, he is doing a difficult job, God. He's putting in leaflets, and they pay hardly anything for putting in the leaflets, but I don't understand why you'd want me to take my £25 and give it to him. And I quite often, sometimes, you know, as I said earlier, I quite often try and bargain with God a bit, perhaps. Bit like, I can't remember the man in the Old Testament, is it about the fleece? He puts it out a second night to just double check, you know. Really. And I said to Cobble, okay, I'll finish this paper, I'll walk down the other side. If he's still there, I'll do it. Yeah? I walked down, I just walked at my normal pace. I didn't want to walk faster, I didn't want to walk slower. I lost sight of him, and then I turned the corner for my last paper, and there he was, face to face. He didn't speak any English. I said to him, God's told me to give you this £25. He didn't understand me. I just said, him up there wants me to give you this. He's blessing you. And off he went. I've never seen him again. I don't know what happened from that. I've got no idea of it. But I just feel that obedience to God is key for me in my life. And I see things coming from it. Those little things, doing those little obedience things, they transform my life. Just taking God at his word and stepping on with it. And just being willing to do the ridiculous things. And I think about them differently now. I think, what does that lead to, that event? Is that man got something? Does he need that £25 for something? And I end up praying for him. I say, God, you know, whatever it is, just be with him. I don't know what it is. And he started to, through this sort of recentering my life, he started to turn me outwards more, to see people. My father was an evangelist, and I could never really understand how he managed to do what he did. How he did it day after day after day, knocking on people's doors. And I realise now how he did it a little bit. I got a little bit of insight, because as God's tried to recenter my life, and it's not, I'm not arrived, I'm just on the journey, I started to realise, goodness me, all these people around. And God has just shared his heart with me, and I just want to make my heart like his. And he... I just feel a compassion for them now sometimes. I want to speak to them. I don't want to speak to him about them about him necessarily. I just want to speak to them, have a relationship with them, share some time. I sometimes give them pieces of cake that my wife makes. They're completely shocked, I have to say, when you pitch up and say to them, I brought this piece of cake for you. Or, you know, where do you live? Can I just drop it into you? And sometimes you see on their faces, a man I've walked past for 10 years, who works with a stoop, whose wife has, I think, died. And the day that God said to me, no, you want you to stop, Alice, I want you to have a conversation with him. I stopped to see his face light up. And I just took the time to acknowledge him. And I've spoken to him a few times since. I shared a piece of cake with him a bit later on. And I intend to sort of follow up. I feel God saying, I want you to follow up on these people a bit. I still want you to be in relationship with me, and I want you to feel my heart, and I want you to just follow up with them. And I just wanted to end by just saying a few key words about my relationship with God and how it's changed over this period of time in my life. As I've already said, I think God is centered around love and compassion. He's gentle and patient and kind. He's always treated me kindly through it, always waited, never bullied me, never persuaded me, just waited. Always been there, always been a step ahead of me. His rhythm is gentle and slow. Constantly he reminds me through Snowy. I think I'm just training Snowy, and Snowy thinks he's training me, and I think he is. I'm constantly pulling ahead. I've had to accept that I'm pulling ahead of God all the time. So many times over this last period, I found myself in situations and I said, well, I thought you said this is God. And he said, yes, Alistair, but you just stopped listening before you got to the important bit of the message, and you went off and did it. And now you think, and I think, oh my goodness, yes, I missed the last bit because I'm too busy getting on and doing it. And he's asking me to slow down. And I see that he's gentle and slow. His burden is light. His yoke is sort of easy. I've got that around the wrong way. His yoke is light and his burden is easy. That when you do the things in line with God, they're easier, they're lighter. The pressure doesn't weigh on you. I still have some of that pressure weighing on me, I have to say. I'm not at the end of the road. I don't know whether I'll ever be at the end of the road. I still feel there are things weighing down on me. He speaks in the quietness and the stillness, as I've already said, from all kinds of different angles. I feel that when I pray, instead of beseeching him to do the things, prayer is more now for me aligning myself with God, just waiting for him to speak. I have sometimes have people on my mind. I've got a particular friend on my mind. I don't know what to pray for him. I just feel he's on my mind. I can't see him. I want to see him. And when I prayed for him, a couple of Sundays ago, sitting down here somewhere, I just felt this immense sadness. And that is just typical of the way that God responds to me sometimes. He's just saying to me, that's the issue. Just work on it, Alice. Just think about it. Just come with me on the journey and I'll reveal what you need to pray for him. And as Peter said, God wants to involve us. That's another thing. He wants us. Like, we are like Jesus in a way. We are sons of God and daughters of God. And we are his emissaries on earth. And just like Jesus said, you can only work through me, and I can only work through the Father. But we are his emissaries on earth. And he wants us to be obedient and live in his rhythm, walk in his rhythm. It was in the hymn, I had it on my mind here to say wisdom. Wisdom is a key thing for me. I often pray at those words from James about, give me wisdom, Father, help me to know what to do in this situation. And quite often I have to say, the things happen, I get the answer, and then I think to myself, I don't know how that came. And God just brings me back and says, well, you prayed for it, didn't you ask for wisdom? And I just give you a little bit of insight into that. Now, just pick it up and move on. I often find, I wanted to share this because I don't know why, I just felt it, I should say it. I often find in the morning that I turn around and I'm on my round, I think, well, where are you, God, this morning? I don't feel you're here. I know you're here, but I don't feel you're here. And he quite often reminds me, he says, well, this is a relationship, Alistair. Where did we leave off? Where did we last? What were we talking about the last time we talked? And I go back to that and I think, oh my goodness, you're back here again. It's not, he's not here. It's I'm back in listening to where he was. And I'm moving on again. It's a relationship. It's an ongoing thing day to day. I wanted to finally finish by saying, I haven't arrived. I'm just journeying. It's a painful journey. I'm constantly working on the things from my past and trying to reshape my outlook on life and reshape my responses and deal with my responses, which are not helpful. My wife will confirm my responses aren't always good. I'm not always kind and loving. I'm not always there. I'm too pushy. I want the things to happen now. I'm not gentle enough. I'm not kind enough. And I wanted to sort of quote as a bit of a paraphrase of what Paul says in Romans 7. He's got a long chapter on it about the law and the way the law brings us to a realization that we failed and we need God. But at the end of it, he sort of says something like, I constantly do what I don't want to do. And I don't do what I want to do. And that sums me up really. I constantly am reminded I don't do the things I want to do, and I do the things I don't want to do. And in a way, I hope that God doesn't take the bipolar away in the most strange and perverse way, because if he does, I know myself so much better now that I'll just slip back and do it myself. And I don't want to do that. I want to stay in sync with him. I want to align myself. I want to get my life in rhythm with him. So I'll end there, and I'd just like to pray, if that's okay. Father God, we thank you that you are in our lives from beginning to end. You see it all. You've designed it all. You've worked it all out, Lord. And whatever we've got going on in our lives, you knew it would happen before it happened. You knew our responses. Lord, I thank you that we can depend on you. And that, Father, as you said to that rich person, Lord, that came to ask you what he had to do to get eternal life, at the end you said, with man this is impossible, but with you, God, everything is possible. And we just want to give you glory, Lord. And as Nebuchadnezzar, when he came back from that 7-year journey of eating grass, he just gave glory to you. We would give you glory and thank you for who you are. And thank you that you want to be in relationship with us. Amen.